Are you seeing much change in how affordable Baltimore's housing is?
There's a huge variation in affordability. I talked about Howard Park with the high vacancy or the growing vacancy rates and high rates of no mail being delivered. It actually also ended up being the neighborhood this year with among the highest housing unaffordability matrix, or sorry, housing unaffordability index, which is how many people spend more than 30% of their income on both mortgage and rent. And Howard Park, West Arlington showed up as being very high on both of those indicators. So in terms of housing unaffordability, it seems to be in the western parts of the city that is growing in terms of distress, in terms of unaffordability. That's a function of both, you know, people not having the income to pay for their rent and mortgage, and then also the equity in their housing not really growing enough so that they could actually do more in their house.
So would you expect housing affordability indicators to grow worse if the housing market continues to recover, or to grow better as people build more equity?
It pretty clearly is correlated with people's incomes. Where we have lower incomes, we have high unaffordability. And so in the neighborhoods where we have pretty high incomes, we have affordability. So I think it's really tracking people's incomes and ability to maintain or grow their own income so that they can continue to afford their house and rent.
We didn't talk about education much, and I saw that you found that the percentage of kids chronically absent or truant dropped at every level, especially in elementary schools. What else did you see happening in educating kids?
So the truancy rates did drop, and then also the kindergarten readiness score went up pretty substantially. So we track from every point of the child's life, from kindergarten to third grade reading to high school proficiency and beyond. And so we can see some kind of good measures for the Baltimore school system educating our children and being ready for kind of life and beyond.
Yeah, you have a graphic that shows percentage of kids ready for first grade rose from 66% to 73% in 1 year.
Yes.
That's huge.
Yes.
But you also found that high school HSA test achievement scores in both math and reading were lower.
So the HSS scores tend to be lower in general. We measure it a little bit differently than the school system does. So there's a little bit of a methodological change for us. We measure any student in high school from 9th to 12th grade that's taking that exam. And in high school, you can take it multiple times. So a ninth grader might have taken it just to prepare for eventually passing it. But we track however many tests were given out and then however many children passed or failed. So it's more of a measure of how many students are trying to take the exam than a reflection of how many people are actually completing. Because if you look at our completion rates, they're going up and our withdrawal rates are going down.
So you've been collecting this data since 2000. How do communities use it?
In addition to the grant writing that I mentioned before, communities use these data in ways that we probably had no idea that we were going to have them use. The report is just the beginning of Vital Science 12. It's a compilation of ideas that we've put together to kind of feed people through the lots of data that's in the report. But the data is online and available for anybody to download, interactively look at, and communities have been using that data for citizen journalism. We saw one report where somebody took the data that we have on our website and used it to have a blog and have a conversation using it for data visualization purposes. People use the data in very creative ways, and because it's open, it enables kind of that free use of the data in a way that kind of sparks conversation. And then the other thing that we tell communities to do is every one of our 55 communities has a community profile that is available for download, regardless of your technical skills. It's just a document that you can use. You know, take it to your next community meeting. Take a look at what's in the profile, see the trends in some of these indicators going up or down, and have a conversation within your community about whether or not you think the data corroborates what you're feeling or what you're seeing, what kind of plans you're trying to get through, and see if the data helps you make the case for either changing something or working on something more in the future. We go to community organization meetings all the time to present what's in the data, and that's an open invitation.
And what kind of feedback is useful to you in designing the next edition of Vital Signs?
We have two types of feedback that we typically get. We get one saying, what does this data mean? You know, really, how do we use the data? And what does that mean for neighborhoods? And then we get very technical users, which we actually really value. People that are reviewing the data, making sure that our methodology is correct, making sure that they can recreate the data that we've done. So those include faculty, students, people that are interested in Baltimore, may or may not actually live in Baltimore, but interested in getting to know and becoming more familiar with it. We value both of those conversations because they really do help make sure that the data is high quality, available, and accessible to the public.
Is Baltimore unusual among cities in having a group like the Baltimore Neighborhoods Indicators and Alliance that does such a deep dive into data?
Baltimore was an early adopter into this kind of project, having started, way back in the late 1990s, 2000. But we are loosely organized by the Urban Institute out of Washington, D.C., and there are now 36 cities around the nation that have a project that's either similar or very closely related to a Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance. And we learn from each other. It's called the National Neighborhood Indicators Partnership. We don't always know which indicators are going to be relevant, and so learning from what other cities might have tried out, we bring them back to Baltimore.
So you usually have a data day in the summer to share your findings at a different level and get feedback. What's on tap for this summer?
So when we release Vital Signs every year, that's a lot of information. Obviously, even this conversation can only get to the tip of the iceberg. And so every year we invite community organizations or anybody else that's interested in the data to join us for a workshop called Baltimore Data Day. And this will be our fifth annual event. It's on July 25th, 2014. And we invite everybody to come join us and have a deeper dive and have a longer conversation about not only this data, but other complementary data that's available for neighborhoods to use.
Is there going to be a theme of Data Day this year?
This year's theme for Baltimore Data Day is about smart cities. How do we make sure that we have the data available for the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance to actually do this work? And how can neighborhoods use it? How can the government use it better? Because that will be, in the end, or in the 21st century, how we can become smarter about more limited resources, about making sure that we improve quality of life and get the data in the hands of people at the right time, in the right way. And that's what the theme is going to be about for this year.
Okay. See you there.
Thank you.